find Jesus Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner. Dr. Bud Maher is still getting settled in Pittsburgh, so he'll join us next week. We're coming to you live from the Mercy Live Up Studios in Des Moines, Iowa, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And then if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app from Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can listen to us nearly anywhere. Like I said, it's just me today in the studio, but it's great to be back. I know last time we talked a few weeks ago, I was going for surgery. I'm not any skinnier. I couldn't ask the doc to shed off a few pounds, but my stomach muscles are no longer poking around where they're not supposed to be. Because of the miracle of modern medicine, I no longer have to worry about a hernia. So I'm not allowed to lift anything. Like, I saw Deacon Tony lifting something, and I just, like, had to look and shake my head. And I think I critiqued, you were using your back, and you're not supposed to do that, Deacon Tony.
I should be using my legs.
That's
Bo,
right. Use your legs when you're. Yeah. And you like to. Yeah. You instruct people how to lift properly. And
well, yeah. Yeah. I teach my spin class. In fact, that's where I was this morning at 5A when everybody 5A. Else should be asleep. Right. People said there's 2 5 o'clocks in the day.
That's right. You have the hidden 5 o'clock.
Yeah. So I had them spinning and grinning this morning.
Well, that's why I wasn't at spin class, was it because the doctor said no. Also, I've never been. Yeah. Also, it's never happened.
I want that prescription, too, because I'm getting too old for this spin in the morning.
That sounds good. Well, as always, we're brought to you, underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences. And one of the events that we want you all to be aware of coming up, it's our Faith and Healing speaker series. This is the fifth year. I'm bad at math. Bud's the math guy, and he's gone. He's bad at math, too. We're really bad at math. Any rate, either the fourth or fifth year, I should really look that up, but we have it, our start for the year, Mercy Week, where the week the Sisters of Mercy are founded, Servant of God, Catherine McCauley's birthday, is later in September. So on Thursday, September 21st, we will have our first Faith and Healing speaker series. So, like last year, same sort of setup. Open to the public, free parking. We have hors d'oeuvres. It will be at 6 o'clock in the Sullivan Center. That's our nice new building. So, remember, Mercy College is south of 235. It's not anywhere attached to the hospital. Same general area, but we're south of 235. So that's September 21st. That's Thursday, 6 p.m. We have Dr. Adam DeVille, a friend of mine, who's going to be talking about a very interesting subject. He's going to be talking about Christian interactions with Sigmund Freud. Now, the idea, of course, is we have these modern giants from like Freud, Marx, Nietzsche, that obviously had things to say critical about Christianity. But Dr. Adam DeVille is going to show us how we engage with our opponents in a worthwhile way that not only strengthens our arguments against Freud, so to speak, but also strengthens our understanding as well. So it's called Alter Egos in Dialogue. So again, one more time, September 21st, Thursday, 6 p.m., free to the public, hors d'oeuvres, you should come. Also, as always, brought to you by Cartridge World. Cartridge World, an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great. Perfect for business, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. Business customers have pickup and delivery options as available as well. And the products are all guaranteed for full replacement. Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts at 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com. Well, like I said, Bud isn't going to be able to make it this week. He's in Pittsburgh, so we're going to go even further across the globe to talk to our first guest today, Dr. Brian Sudlow, a friend of mine from way back. He's actually a professor over in Aston University in Birmingham, not Alabama, Birmingham in the UK, the Isle across the sea. He's a lecturer in French and Translation Studies and a director of undergraduate programs. And as they spell that in Britain, P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E-S, so it's even more special. No, but Brian Sudlow, French is his big deal, but he's actually written a lot on modernity in literature and then how that has sort of sprung into worries, especially in French literature at the turn of the, after World War II, about technology and society. So we're going to talk about technology, society, modernity, and how those things interact when we talk about the common good. And he has a book that he's working on that has very many interesting things to say. So that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. So stick around. We'll be back in a minute. The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner today. We'll see you in a bit.
Thank you, Farm Bureau agent Cindy Schulte, for underwriting Catholic Women Now. As an authorized independent agent, Cindy's team can provide health insurance options from Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa. Cindy Schulte at 1315 50th Street in West Des Moines or on the web at cindyschulte.com. 515-226-2111. Cindy and her team know health insurance.
Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Iowa is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. Products available at Farm Bureau Financial Services.
Here is your forecast on Iowa Catholic Radio. This large area of high pressure sticking around, so dry weather in the forecast for the rest of the week with a gradual warming trend. Beautiful weather today, plenty of sun, the high from the low to middle 70s. Mainly clear for the overnight, a low near 50, and abundant sunshine for tomorrow, the high upper 70s. Sunny and warmer, 85 on Friday. The weather is brought to you by Divine Treasure, celebrating 25 years of service to the greater Des Moines community. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Naira Moore on Iowa Catholic Radio.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Are you ready for this? Iowa Catholic Radio and Divine Treasures is proud to bring you a brand new local weather and storm report 24/7 around the clock. The Storm Report is a customized local weather service dedicated to providing you daily forecasts, live morning show interaction, and severe weather coverage just for you. Rain, shine, or snow, we got you covered no matter where you go. Sponsored by Divine Treasures, your Catholic book and gift store. Located at 5701 Hickman Road in Des Moines. 515-255.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner with you today. Bud Maher out in Pittsburgh getting things unpacked and eating whatever they eat in Pittsburgh. I don't even think they don't even have a food, right? That's Cincinnati has chili. Hoagies. Okay, that's fine. That makes sense. All right, eating a hoagie. But for today, we have Dr. Brian Sudlow, lecturer of French with translation studies, director of undergraduate programs, Aston University in Birmingham, UK. Longtime friend, Brian. I'm glad to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, but thank you very much indeed. Thanks for having me on.
It's an honor to get to have you on to talk about all these things, and like I threw out to the audience that we're going to be talking about technology and maybe even technological pessimism. That starts to be one of the areas that you study. The first thing, though, that I think someone's going to throw out is the only reason we're friends is because technology. I have never met you, and I only talk to you through all these devices. So what gives, Bo and Brian? How do we navigate that sort of idea?
Well, technology is a two-edged sword, and it has on the one side all the advantages that we look for, that we've benefited from, Bo, that we're benefiting from even now as I'm talking to you from across the Atlantic. But there is always the other side of that blade. There's the sharp, jagged, unintended side, if you like, the unintended consequences, and no technology is free of unintended consequences, and that's the real heart of the issue, I think.
So on that idea of unintended consequences, maybe to make it a bit more concrete, if we take a technology like the clock, which we're all completely used to, and, you know, it's like breathing air for us to have clocks and measure time. Is there a way in which the measurement of time, for instance, would be a good example about the unintended consequences of something as benign seeming as measuring time?
Yeah, well, I think the clock is a really good example, actually, because, you know, certain cultures are still, let's say, in a kind of an ambiguous relationship with the clock. If you go to Italy, for example, you might be asked or invited to an interview in the afternoon or in the morning. And, you know, a more precise Anglo-Saxon like you or me might say, well, do you mean early morning? Do you mean, you know, later on and so on? But that's because in our cultures, we're much more sensitive to these things. We have sort of forgotten the roots of that precision. But so, I mean, some people might trace it back to, say, the early 20th century, where strict timekeeping within factories became a huge issue, you know, for industry and things like this. So we're much more sensitive to these things in our cultures. So I think there's the difference there is that time is seen on the one hand from the point of view of kind of savoir vivre, what the French would call savoir vivre, you know, how to enjoy your time and appreciate it and so on. On the other hand, with the precise clock keeping, time is much more seen as a source that's going to be exploited. And once you're into that category of exploiting everything, using everything to its maximum, then you're on the road, I think, to a kind of utilitarian thing. And I think there's the difference between the two sides.
Well, I actually think you bringing this up about the conception of time, maybe the sort of ways in which the metaphors of time direct our lives, begin to answer this next question. Because I think some people would go, why would someone interested in French studies and literature, you know, the first book you wrote was really about literary modernism. How do they end up talking about technology and especially the reception of technology, the French exception of technology in a certain time period? But I think that starts to go why it would interest someone like you so much is if you talk about literature, we act like, oh, literary things, it's this, you know, wispy, ephemeral ideas about metaphors and stuff like this. But there's something about the metaphors that guide our daily life and technology, whether it's time management with a clock to just, I mean, the nuclear bomb and its role in current geopolitics. There's a way in which technology performs an almost literary power in our lives about how we talk about everyday elements of how we live.
Sure. Well, I think you're quite right. Let's put aside straight away the idea that literature is simply some sort of enclosed playground for the imagination. All cultures throughout history have told themselves tales of one sort or another, but in telling themselves those tales, they've been trying to understand all kinds of things. They've been trying to understand God, life, love, relationships, and so on. And so those are that literary mode of approaching things isn't, it might, if you like, have a soft edge. It might not have the the live simplicity of some mathematical equation, but it's another way of embedding our knowledge about the world and the horizons that we think exist for us. So now my book about Catholic literature in France and England actually took literature in a sort of a broad sense. So it was about poetry and prose and novels and novellas and so on. But I also included polemical writing and some journalism and so on, because, of course, many of the writers I was talking about, and just to give some concrete examples, G.K. Chesterton, and on the French side, Charles Péguy, these are writers who moved between journalism, poetry, essays, fiction, very, very easily, you see, demonstrating the sort of thing that I'm saying about literature not being, an enclave. Now, in doing this, we begin to see that there are huge questions which have been almost annexed by the social sciences, by the physical sciences, as if literature or philosophy has nothing to say about those issues. And that's simply not true. That's a falsehood in our culture. And so when we come to a question like technology, I think it's perfectly legitimate to approach it from a literary point of view, but also then from a polemical or philosophical point of view, because beyond the mathematical equations and the physical science that might shape technology, there are bigger questions about the good and the good of man, the common good, of course, but also what philosophers would call the useful good and the noble good. These are all questions that need to be addressed, and scientists and technicians and so on can only address part of those questions.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner. We're talking with Dr. Brian Sudlow today about technology, literature, a whole host of things. Brian, to your point, I just taught a class yesterday to some freshmen in high school, actually. It's something I do on the side for a church. And I was trying to explain to them the Averroist understanding. So Averroes, you know, the medieval Islamic philosopher. I was trying to explain his understanding of the agent intellect and how it is that people, you know, how we have knowledge. And eventually they all said, like, oh, so he believed in the internet and the cloud hundreds of years before we ever came up with it. And, you know, there's a way, of course, that's like a useful metaphor, because Averroes really did seem to think like we shared sort of a common intellect. And my point is not to get into the niceties of medieval philosophy, but to point out the power of technology as a metaphor to make sense of something that happened hundreds of years ago. And that's just a small demonstration about the reason that technology is just not the province of technicians, is because with everything we add to our arsenal of being human, it does shape every moment forward about how we're going to live differently. It's not, so to speak, a one-time event that you put a wrench in a humanoid's hands. Once we have the wrench, the world is now different subsequent to that.
Well, that's right, and that's really getting at what I think is the second big problematic with technology, which is that technologies are not just mechanical or electronic, but they also concern ways of thinking, ways of organizing society, even ways of organizing our own lives. You know, sort of technologies of the self, if you like. And I think it's good to keep that that kind of understanding of the word technology in view. We tend, being, you know, concrete-minded Anglo-Saxons, we tend to see technology only as a concrete thing, but it's much more fluid. There are instantiations of technology in all kinds of areas of life, intellectual and spiritual and moral and so on. But coming to your point about the internet, if I may, I think it's very, very important to understand that many of the elements of the technology that's evoked by the internet, many of these elements are simply part of human thought anyway. And one of the writers I'm particularly interested in, for example, is Gabriel Marcel, who has quite a following in the United States, actually. He was known in the States and read. He was translated quite a lot. And what troubled Marcel about technology was the mentality of abstraction that it seemed to encourage. Now, what has that got to do with the internet? Well, what happens when people go on social media? The people that they're interacting with, of course, their relationships might develop in a deep and rich way, as did ours, but many people have the experience of only meeting people in a very superficial way, because the people that they encounter in social media are just abstractions. They don't actually see the whole person. They only see an aspect of the person. So the internet itself is a very interesting model and example of the potential for the erosion of human respect that can come about through technologies.
Well, and I think that's, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it Marcel who, he was initially worried about radio, because he said radio sort of apes the ubiquity of God. And for the audience, ubiquity, because you don't know, just means sort of the ever-presentness. And so the idea that there's radio waves just sort of out there, and then you can tune into them or not. The reason I know that this is a big metaphor for God, because at Protestant divinity school, someone gave that example of the radio as Luther's understanding about how the Lutheran understanding of the Eucharist is. He's like, yeah, Jesus' Eucharist is ubiquitous, and the bread sort of tunes him in like a radio. So I heard that with my own ears. And, of course, this isn't us, like, you know, parading out why we don't think people should listen to radio, but it's to say that there's unintended, like you said, consequences about how we use technologies that we all just assume. So the internet has a sort of race towards the bottom of abstraction, if that makes sense, where we think of things only in superficial ways. And the radio, up until recently, I think, makes people think like there's a sort of like standing reserve of divinity or humanity or whatever. There's this, the world is always at my beck and call. I just need to turn the dial. And those are both serious warpings of thought, at least, I think, to the Christian mind.
Yeah. Yes, I love that expression, that metaphor that you used, a race to the bottom of abstraction. I think you're absolutely right here. We always have to bear in mind that we tend to be instrumentalists. We don't want to be utilitarians and so on, but we really are. So we only tend to think about the benefits of things. And so, as you say, you know, how could anyone possibly question the benefits of the radio? Here we are on a radio show, right? Here I am speaking to you across the internet. But it's then interesting to see the reaction of people who, say, in the 1920s or 1930s, were receiving that technology in a culture that didn't yet know the radio. One of the French writers I'm interested in, Georges Duhamel, not a Catholic, incidentally, though a great friend of François Mauriac, who's a great Catholic novelist. Duhamel talked about the invasion of noise which had come about through the radio. That, of course, is a different preoccupation from Gabriel Marcel. And Marcel was concerned about the way that radio seemed to kind of ape that omnipresence of God in a way. But it's important to remember those things. And of course, when we do get new technologies, it's extraordinary how the legacies of previous cultural situations get forgotten. Memorization. I mean, this is a good example of the effect, the negative effects of the book. And even though I write books myself, I have to say this, that with books, people tend to memorize less. Well, when you memorize less, actually that's a loss. That is a loss. I think this is something that we have to learn very much. So another French writer, Paul Virilio, a contemporary French writer, has talked about the need for a university of disaster. I mean, what is the university of disaster? He said the university of disaster is the place where we would study these negative effects, because we don't like to think about them. We tend to exclude them. We say, oh, well, that's okay. That's just collateral damage. And yet in some ways, of course, collateral, the damage isn't collateral at all. I think that's particularly true of the internet, of course.
Well, that makes me immediately think of two things. One, in philosophy, of course, very famously, Socrates in the Theaetetus, I think, he brings up exactly what you say about writing, is you have
memorization.
He makes one side says, we invented writing and now we can remember, and the other side goes, because you invented writing, no one will remember. So this is thousands of years in the making of philosophers raining on everyone's parade, seemingly. It's funny because people will be like, oh, well, you're just being a Debbie Downer or something. You're like, well, no, of course we all use these things. And, I mean, Plato was writing everything down. But just because you use something doesn't mean you have to, give it 100% thumbs up. You can admit what we have to be on the lookout for. In bioethics, we'll throw this out when we're teaching students about how we understand medicine and what we think medicine is for. Because, people will go like, well, you got to test medicine. And, if we're not running tests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if we're not doing experiments. And so we'll throw out like, well, what is the cost that would make a medicine okay? What would make a procedure okay? Because the earliest procedures in heart surgery, the death rate was 100%. None of them were effective. It took them quite a while before they actually had the first successful heart surgery. And so we throw it out in a more mundane way. We go, people die every year driving cars. And it's clear that there are deaths specifically because there are cars. Now, there's all sorts of things, all sorts of benefits from having vehicles. But vehicular death is obviously something that happens because of vehicles. And so we ask them, and we want them to write down a number, how many deaths from cars is too much where you would stop using a car? and they're flabbergasted. They've never thought of, would there ever be an amount of vehicular deaths that would make us stop using cars? Because for them, that's it's almost like a question you can't broach. And I think that's the problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And can I just add another notion in the mix here, Bo, which is that of invisibility. Because there are the visible deaths by cars. These are the deaths by cars through road traffic accidents and so on. But then there's the invisible deaths by cars. That is to say, because I drive, then I don't walk anywhere anymore. I don't run anywhere anymore. And I'm now overweight. And I'm dying of heart disease.
Hey, are you talking about me here? Well, settle down, man. No, I'm kidding.
Bo, I was not talking about you at all. But there is a problem, and it's not just in American culture. It's there in British culture as well. And our doctors are telling us time and time again, eat less and move more, because we've become a very sedentary culture that is either sat in front of a computer or a TV. Or, we're jumping in the car to go to the supermarket, if we haven't ordered our groceries online now. So, my point here is about invisibility and visibility. There are some things that are clearly visible and some things that are not invisible. Just another point, if I may, is also just for any listener who's beginning to think that we are a couple of unreconstructed Luddites, it's almost, in a way, these questions are almost not about the technologies at all. And of course, I would completely defend, the Catholic moral position that most technologies are actually morally neutral. But that's the point. It's the uses and habits that form around them, and particularly the habits, because these are the things that come upon us unconsciously. And as we now know through many recent studies of, say, mobile phones and the internet and so on, the habits that a lot of us have with mobile phones that have grown up unconsciously and so on are catastrophic, for things like attention. People get into a lift, they can't they can't bear to just go up in a lift five. Sorry, when I say a lift, I mean an elevator.
Yeah, no, right.
They can't bear to go up in an elevator five stories without getting out a phone to check what's going on the internet, it's about the uses. It's about the uses and the effects that are visible and invisible. There you go.
Well, and I think that's why this goes back to the connection with literature and whatever we mean by that. And for me, teaching the poetics of Aristotle, it's funny to literature broadly for him, he says, is the imitation of nature, and he means by that the imitation of human nature, human action. So it's funny how a lot of what we're talking about with technology and literature, there's a way that what technology does exactly is imitate human acts in a sort of mechanical automated way. So there's a way in which literature, which is intended to be an imitation of human acts, and technology, it's no wonder these two things get compared, because they're both supposed to be pointing to what humans would do, like you said, on their own without them. We would either be talking about these stories, or we would be, lifting this boulder, or whatever it might be. So the point that I bring this up is, not only is that a sort of strange overlap that our definitions of technology and literature are similar, but I actually think that's why it's important for us to harness the power of images to really bring up what it is we're doing with technology, these habits you're talking about. So again, for instance, I bring up my students at every break in a class, like a third of them go use the restroom and then two thirds of them check their phones. So
Is that only during the break? I heard they're looking at it even during your class, though.
Well, we attach extra points to not using technology. But the point being is, what I tell them is like, oh, you have to, you have to pay reverence to Lord Apple or Lord Google, because that's what it looks like. It looks like, oh, we just got done in class. Now it's time to pray to our devices in our hands. And it's the most reverent I see a group of human beings outside of church on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's something really significant going on within our culture there. And we none of us like to think about it because there's an awful lot of us guilty of this now. What we know, and I'm thinking particularly here of a fairly recent book called Mind Change. It's by a British neurologist called Susan Greenfield. What we know now is that these kind of technologies and the system of notifications and rewards that you get, thumbs up on things that you've posted and this sort of thing, this has an extraordinary effect on our dopamine levels in our brains. It's almost like a sort of continual series of sugar lumps that are being offered to us. Now, what's the point? Well, of course, for us, and of course, there are great benefits to social media. Don't get me wrong, and you and I have benefited from it. But of course, for the Googles and the Facebooks and all the rest of it, they are profiting immensely from what's been called data exhaust, and from all our online activity. Of course, they're making lots and lots of money. So it's never in their interests for us to turn our phone off, to close our computer. It's never in their interests for us to switch off the modem, and so on. And yet, this is where we see there's a gulf between our interest in technology and their interest in technology. They're the purveyors. They want to sell us all that technology, get us involved. They're very happy if we're addicted to it and so on. But our good as individuals, and I would say in the common good, may very well mean turn off the phone, turn off the computer, turn off the TV, to even turn off the radio and make space. And then you can begin to encounter things that only lie that can only lie outside of our attention when we're filling our attention with all this ephemera.
Well, Brian, I think that's great. We're coming up to the break. Can you join us after the 2-minute break?
I certainly can, Bob.
Okay, and when we get back, that idea about, so we've talked about this and laid this out, how is it that the common good and discussion about the common good could maybe do something about regulating this the neutral technology for better purposes? That's what we'll talk about when we get back. So stick around with the Uncommon Good. We'll be back in a few minutes. Exactly. What if I told you there was a story, let's say a movie,
okay,
and it had fascinating origin stories, epic battle scenes, and powerful arcs of loss and redemption? Wouldn't you want to see that movie?
Of course. It sounds better than most movies these days.
What if I told you it was all true?
I would definitely watch.
Well, friends, the story is the story of the Holy Scriptures, and here at Iowa Catholic Radio, we want you to reclaim the depth of not only the greatest story, but your story as well.
You can hear Read the Bible in a Year every day at 5 a.m. with Gene Wells and Jim Lyons. Friends, you don't want to miss it.
Are you thinking about getting a new car or boat this summer? Donate your old one to Iowa Catholic Radio. Don't settle for a low trade-in price. Instead, donate your car, truck, boat, motorcycle, or RV and turn it into an invaluable gift that will aid us with our mission to help more people encounter Jesus. The process is easy and the cause is important. Just call 844-IOWA-CAR or visit us online at iowacatholicradio.com and donate your car today.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Are you ready for this? Iowa Catholic Radio and Divine Treasures is proud to bring you a brand new local weather and storm report 24/7 around the clock. The Storm Report is a customized local weather service dedicated to providing you daily forecasts, live morning show interaction, and severe weather coverage just for you. Rain, shine, or snow, we got you covered no matter where you go. Sponsored by Divine Treasures, your Catholic book and gift store, located at 5701 Hickman Road in Des Moines. 515-255-5230 or online at divinetreasures.net.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher is off eating hoagies in Pittsburgh. Today, who we have with us is Brian Sudlow, lecturer of French and Translation Studies and director of undergraduate programs at Aston University in Birmingham in the United Kingdom. We are talking about technology, all of its many sort of mini-edged swords. We said two-edged sword, but maybe it's even more edges than that. And we were going to talk about technology and maybe how the idea of the common good can guide the sort of perilous valley that we're walking through. So, Brian, you know, like you said, anytime you get into conversations like we're having, it's easy to dismiss people like you and I as either being Luddites or ungrateful, being that we're on the radio using the internet. But there's a way in which what we want to talk about is the cost of all of this. And it's one thing to talk about the cost per person, right? Because some people are, frankly, doing okay with their phones. Other people are addicted. And when we do that, we fall into almost like a medical model, right? Like maybe you have a problem, but if you don't, no big deal. But I think what you are trying to push is unless we talk about this at a societal level with the idea of the common good in mind, we're not going to figure the trick out, as it were, that's wrong with all this.
Of course, I mean, the problem of the common good is intractable, really. You know, it's very, very difficult to solve it when there are so many vested interests. And in this, I suppose I am something of a technological anarchist, in that I despair of seeing any, you know, any common action that's society wide that is prepared to do anything about where we are. But of course, in another way, thinking that we can construct the common good like a technician constructs a machine would be to fall into a purely technological error, wouldn't it?
No, and that's perfectly. That's a great point, because the question starts to be, who's going? Like, what are we going to do? Regulate this? Is this going to be like the government putting out quotas? I mean, what do we even mean?
Exactly, and so I think that. You know, speaking from the Catholic perspective, the answer to the kinds of dilemmas that we were just mentioning before, and of course there are lots more that we could speak about. The Catholic answer is always going to start with charity and with love, and that is obviously love of God, but then love of man and love of what makes life good for man. What makes life good for the human being? And in that sense, I think it once you set up that criterion, then you can begin to audit what's going on around you, and as an individual, or as a family, as a parent, someone who's responsible for others, even a teacher, you can begin to help others ask questions about whether the way in which they're using technology is actually for the good of the human being. Let me give you one really clear example here, and I'll start with something that would have happened years and years ago. You know, once upon a time, cities got so huge, and they still are huge, and so you know, concreted over and all the rest of it, that these poor little city children never saw the country and never saw living animals. You know, the only animals they knew were in the butcher. And so some bright spark came up with the idea of the city zoo. And so people started, I don't know when the city zoo movement started, but it's been here in the UK, and I'm sure in the US for decades. And so people imported farm animals to the city, and people could, you know, children could go along and, you know, gaze through the railings at these cows and chickens and so on, and they had a kind of spectator relationship with the sorts of realities which once upon a time would have been perfectly normal and natural and almost universal. Even largest cities, say going back 500 years ago, would have been, you know, very familiar with these sorts of things, but not so much now. Now, of course, the danger, let's come forward to the present day now. The danger is that some of the cultural practices which we still remember, you know, are almost on the point of becoming like city zoos. So, I mean, how many, and your listeners can ask yourselves these questions, you know, how many family meals tonight will take place with teenagers sat around a table with parents, and the teenagers have all got their heads in their phones? Or indeed, maybe the parents have all got their heads in their phones. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at a scenario where the good of man, that is to say sociability, hospitality, exchange, conversation, dialogue, all these things are getting abstracted and sucked onto social media and the internet and so on. But all of a sudden, they're not happening between people in the same room.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, you know, sometimes just for fun, you know, I will text my wife when she's sat at the end of the sofa, but I'll only do it for fun. There's an absurdity, you know, in that situation. On the one hand, we still maintain the value, the cultural value. We're still in contact with that cultural value of, say, the family meal, and yet we can see it shaken all around us by this all-powerful, apparently neutral technology, you know, of the mobile device. So, as I say, I'm kind of a technological anarchist, and I would say, you know, let parents, let families, let individuals elect to try to rediscover some of these things. And of course, sometimes things don't become apparent until you close the technology down. And when you close the technology down, when you turn it off, then you begin to see the things you'd forgotten about.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, and we're speaking with Dr. Brian Sudlow about technology and how we deal with it as a community. You know, Brian, to that point, I think that starts to be fantastic. I credit my friend Mark Sheevy, who's brought this up before in conversations, that half the time when we talk about the new evangelization or how the church would reach out to the culture, we'll have these very abstract, to bring up that word again, abstract ideas maybe. But what we won't do is say, like, hey, you know, you don't need to get Botox at 38 so that you can get your next raise at 40. Or, hey, the rat race, you know, you weren't made for the rat race. It's okay to not. You know, there's all these simple things we could say that, you know, because we have a different idea about what is humane and good, that the church could throw that out and maybe make more inroads being honest about that than maybe acting like we're going to, you know, hit these big abstract chords, so to speak, that we think resonate people but really don't. And I wonder if technology sometimes is exactly the thing. I'm not saying that we necessarily chide people too much. I frankly wish that as a church we would talk about technology more. But I think that what you're getting at is that we can have a positive message about being different from the culture and it not being like, you know, you naughty children, put down your phones. But it's like, hey, do you actually want to know what freedom actually feels like? You need to regard technology in a different way.
Of course. Look, you know, we're still in the in a generation where the idea of family conversation at a meal seems like a good thing. But who knows? In two or three generations, that might not be the case. It might begin to look like a really bizarre and exotic thing. And I'm sure to some young people, it does seem bizarre and exotic. But of course, that's another problem which I don't want to go down. But you know, teenagerhood is kind of an invention. We think it's something natural and normal. It's not. It's a cultural invention and construction. And you know, I mean, you could do another program on the uncommon good about that itself. Yes, I think, I mean, another thing that we have to be aware of and here thinking about, say, the level of the church and so on, is that because we've now been steeped in not only technologies, but what I would call techno-rationalities, the sort of the ways of thinking that get shaped by seeing machines around us all the time, we tend to think even about important things, even about spiritual, theological things, we tend to think about them like technicians. Mm-hmm. We tend to think that the new evangelization, you know, has to have this big systematization and so on. I'm not convinced that's right. And in fact, I think we've got really good examples of where that sort of technologized spirit has sometimes overtaken Catholic initiatives, much to the detriment of the Catholic mission. You know, because things become administered, things become official. And then, you know, when that machine goes wrong, then the people down below aren't necessarily served as they should be.
Yeah, that just made me think of a term that is the scariest term I've ever thought of in my life. I'm going to throw it out to you and hear if you audibly gasp. It's basically mechanized bureaucratic Jansenism, which sounds like the worst thing that could have ever happened on Earth. And at, just for people at home, the Jansenists were the people who really, I mean, I'd have to say that, like, so this is what, the this is the 1400s, roughly, and it goes on for a while. 1600, excuse me. And but there really is a way, I mean, like, some people say, well, it's sort of like Calvinism in a Catholic key. The thing that I want to bring up, though, is there's a way in which the Jansenist really did kind of focus on this idea that if you just did things, like there's things that you did, and if you did them right or in the right order, there it almost really was this sort of technolization of the faith. And I never really kind of thought about that way until you brought that up. And maybe I'm straining the gnat through the eye of the needle here, but I think there's something to that.
Yes, and you know, the there's a very interesting novel that was written, I think it's in the 1950s or so, called Brother Petrock Returns. And Brother Petrock Returns is a story of a medieval monk who has apparently died and he's buried. And several hundred years later, in fact, 700-800 years later, the monks of his monastery are rebuilding the place, and they find his body, and they think that he's an incorruptible saint. And in fact, he wakes up. And this is just a device for the author to then contrast the different mentalities, the modern mentality, with this, you know, this medieval mentality. And very clearly, what Brother Petrock struggles with is the way in which, and here I'm going to extend what you've said about mechanized Jansenists through other areas of modern spirituality. You know, what shocks Brother Petrock is the way that spirituality has sort of become technologized. And it's, you know, if you do these procedures, then you should have this outcome here. Instead of beginning with, that scriptural idea, in fact, that prayer comes through a gift of God to the person initially, that we're called to prayer by the Holy Spirit, and then we move from there, and it's a reciprocal process. It's never just, you know, me doing my exercises. Now, of course, that can be an aspect of a person's experience of prayer and so on. But of course, once you technologize spirituality, once you reduce technology down, once you reduce spirituality down to a system, then in a way you've kind of excluded God from the picture. You've excluded God from the relationship in an odd sort of way. It's a way of trying to take control of things, which is spiritually, I think, very unhealthy.
Well, and I think this goes back to something else that I really want to make sure, and I know that you're not saying this, make sure this is very noticeable to the audience, is we're not saying that, like, man, if people just got religion and Jesus, we'd, like, talk like families around the dinner table and everything would be great, because then that would be the worst version of making the faith a technology, right? Like, oh, the faith is this great technology that makes families hang together. I'd actually almost say that it in many ways it's opposite influence, because we have a disintegrating family. It's even easier for everybody to look on their phone. You know, that starts to be part of it, right? Is why do people look on their phones when they're on the elevators? Probably because they don't feel like they have any connection with those people on the elevator, and they don't feel like they can just strike up a conversation with them. And I'm not trying to say that there's some golden age, but if you lived in a city where you thought, I have at least a sort of modicum of connection with everyone who lives around me, you probably go like, well, hey, I sort of know you, and if I don't, I should meet you. How's everything going? But if you eliminate that, you may as well look on your phone, because you probably think you have a closer connection with whatever is going on that phone than the quote-unquote random strangers in the elevator.
Yeah, well, that may well be the case. And, of course, I think it was Richard Sennett who wrote the book The Fall of Public Man. You know, yes, I mean, the whole idea of privacy and sociability and so on has changed over time. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, coming back to your point about the family, let me just remind you of, I think, a quotation of Christopher Dawson, the great historian and theorist of culture, which I'm sure I've given to you before, which is, Dawson said, secularization began when life stopped being seen as a pilgrimage and began to be seen as a fine art. Mm. And there's, you know, there's the difference. You're absolutely right. Well, one couldn't just sort of import spirituality like it's a technical solution, you know, like a patch over the, you know, the vices of the human. Or the problems, the pathologies of our civilization. But in a way, one needs to get back to the idea of pilgrimage. And, the traditional idea of pilgrimage is, of course, take your shoes off, get your staff, and get on the road.
Right.
And again, look, I know all this can probably sound like I'm a Luddite and I'm saying smash your machines. I'm not. I'm trying to say that we have allowed our horizons to be changed by technology in ways that we're not even aware of, and that's a straitjacket, that's a set of manacles on our wrists that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, there's another quote that you threw my way from. I think the person that actually got us both talking, which is Jorge Bernanou, for the people
George Bernanou.
Yeah. I was going to say you'll correct me French wise. For people who don't know the French, it looks like Bernanos, B-E-R-N-A. I'm going to mess it up. Point being is, go look up Diary of a Country Priest and then like everything else that he wrote. I know that those are translated into English. I'm going to mess up the quote because I can't find it right off the top of my head. But he says that what modernity is that humanity has a whole host of saviors. People that want to... I think I got it. Okay. I think, alas, of that phrase of Christ, so mysterious and so poignant. At that time will I still have friends among you. No doubt the hour is not far off when humanity, having become the passive object of all the laboratory experiments, just like a gentle beast in the hands of vivisectors, we'll find more and more saviors with red hands, but not a single friend. And I think that's the problem in a nutshell, is when we go away from pilgrimage and then, like you said, make it a fine art, then people start to say, and you see this as the progression goes, right? The idea was like, well, individuals have the fine art of making a life. And then people are like, well, maybe communities, or maybe a church, maybe the state. And now there's all these people contending for how we can make human life better than human life is. But what we're lacking is humanity no longer has a friend. It only has saviors with red hands. And I think that's, if we're not willing to ask questions like, what is a good way to use the internet, we're going to fall into those saviors with red hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I just give you another quotation, which, in fact, I came across today. And this is from the German philosopher Günther Anders, who was one-time husband, I think, The Origins of Totalitarianism. Who wrote that? I can't remember her name, the philosopher. Anyway, Günther Anders, famous German philosopher. And he was writing, he wrote a book, or it was a collection of his papers, really, called The Obsolescence of Man. Mm. It came out in the 1950s. And he said... And I'm translating here from the French, which itself is a translation from the German, but bear with me. We are not obliged only to exploit everything which is exploitable, but also to discover the hidden exploitability of everything, even man. Mm. And that idea, I think it's really where we are today with things like, you know, genetic experimentation and so on, because man, the human being himself, is becoming, you know, not just the end of that experimentation, but the means of creating something that's going to be transhuman.
Well, I don't mean to end on such a downer note, but I think that's a good warning for everything that we've talked about. And, Brian, it's been fantastic. It's been an honor to speak with you about this. Dr. Brian Sudlow, lecturer of French with translation studies, director of undergraduate programs at Aston University. And as he mentioned, he has books and essays out. If you put in Brian Sudlow, last name Sudlow, you might be able to find those things. Brian, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
It's always been a delight. Thank you very much.
Well, folks, that was we really talked up to the last moment because that's just been some fascinating stuff. I'm so glad that technology, like I said, neutral, we're not bashing it. Technology allows us to talk to people across the pond. But what a fantastic thing, and I hope that those sort of ruminations stick with you guys for a while. As always, we want to make an appeal. We think of Iowa Catholic Radio not just as a consumeristic choice. We think of it as a family that is doing the work of the Lord. So if you feel so moved to be a part of this family, please make sure to we make this appeal for you for your support. Not everybody has a face for radio like I do, har, 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 but everybody can be a part of it. So if you'd like to remember us and send us support, we would love that. You can send it to our studios. Make sure to tune in for things like Bible in a Year at 5 a.m. Every morning, the Rosary at 9:30. And folks, like I said, thanking Mercy College Cartridge World for underwriting our show. Remember that at Mercy College coming up September 21st at 6 p.m. at the Sullivan Center, we have our first Faith and Healing series with Dr. Adam DeVille, Alter Egos in Dialogue. This has been The Uncommon Good. Like I said, we will hopefully get Bud back with us next week. It sounds like they got moved out there okay and they traveled well. Our prayers really do go out not only for, you know, them, but especially for people who've been affected by Harvey, Hurricane Harvey, people affected by all of the wildfires. I mean, the other day the sky was lit up orange because of wildfires many miles away. But then especially for people in the path of Hurricane Irma, which really seems like a nasty storm. We hope everybody stays safe, and we ask Our Lady to watch over her children in the path of that storm. This has been The Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our city, in our state, in our country, in the entire world. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll join you next week. God bless everybody.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.